Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour on Sports Grid. You also might be listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I am joined by Matt Friedman, and we are here to break down NFL Draft 2020 prop betting. We're going to go from the top of our sheet to the bottom of our sheet. We're going to lock in some value. We are going to throw props left, right, and center at you. Matt, is this the most excited you have ever been for the NFL draft for prop betting?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the largest market we've ever had, just in terms of like the number of props that are being offered, the variety of props, and then also just the size of the market itself. It seems like, especially with nothing else happening, everyone is betting on the prop market this year. So it's a good time to be interested in the NFL draft.
Definitely a good time to be interested in the NFL draft. Definitely a good time to have been like well-versed in this stuff, like having bet on the NFL draft in the past. Like, I can imagine that if you had never been, you know, knowledgeable of these markets before, this would be, I mean, a little bit daunting. You know, just like anytime you're trying to learn about a new sport, it's going to get, you know, a little bit daunting, a little bit frustrating. So, you know, I've wagered on every NFL draft in recent memory. So, you know, yeah. This is just prime time. So, what are you expecting the fallout of COVID-19 to be on the draft compared to a normal year? You know, what are your expectations for pandemonium, for, you know, we're going to get all sorts of leaked reports about medicals and stuff like that. What are you thinking the direct impact of this stuff is going to be?
I think there are going to be fewer trades. I think the first round, or even the first few rounds, are going to take much longer than they normally do, because the NFL has already said that they're willing to work with teams if there are technological issues or they're working out a trade or whatever. So like an actual like fantasy draft, I think there are going to be times when Roger Goodell is just like, we're putting the clock on hold, we're pausing the draft. Like, I think that's going to happen. And I think teams are also going to be more conservative in how they draft players, you know, just in terms of like the number of guys that they probably have on their draft boards. I imagine that number is smaller because they don't have pro day times for, you know, a lot of the guys who didn't go to the combine. There's just information that they don't have. And when they don't have more information, I think they just kind of like start to cocoon it a little bit more. And so I think you're going to see, you know, like more kind of fringe players from like Louisiana and Alabama and like Florida, Texas, like those guys that maybe didn't stand out as much in college, but like they're sort of known because they played like for bigger programs and were kind of more high profile college recruits. I think more of those guys get drafted than the fringe players that we see at like non-Power 5 programs.
So, you know, kind of along those same lines, do we expect that players with medical concerns are just going to fall because the teams don't have their own available information? Obviously, the guy that is, the whole draft sort of rests on what the Dolphins and the Chargers do with Tua. If the Dolphins do not trade up and then don't select Tua at 5, and then the Chargers also elect not to take Tua at 6, I mean, I think that the entire draft at that point, I mean, who can say what is going to happen at that point? You know, once if Tua is on the board at 7, this becomes one of the most unpredictable drafts ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And just think of even like Montez Sweat last year. And that was like a normal year where everyone had access to medical information, all the pro days, everything like that. And Montez Sweat, you know, who was widely mocked in the top 12, fell to pick number 26 last year. And so I think it will be something like that, except even more extreme, because teams just don't have the full information. So yeah, if Tua falls past 6, you kind of have to start thinking about the teams that might jump in, but the Jags at number 9 potentially could take him. I think you could see the Raiders at 12 taking him. But then, I mean, hey, the Patriots at 23, like they could maybe move up. But I don't think he falls into the 20s, but honestly, we really have no idea.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we really just do not have any idea, right? Like we have an, obviously Tua's camp is not going to be like, oh yeah, my hip is terrible. Like I just, you know, I can't get my workouts in. I think the baseline expectation for whatever team drafts Tua is that he probably is not going to play in 2020 as he continues to heal up from this hip injury. So I think that's perfect for the Dolphins. I think it works for the Chargers because they have Tyrod. You know, maybe if the season starts to go really, really far downhill, maybe they decide to give, you know, Easton Stick, a little bit of run out at quarterback. So I think it works with both of those two teams. Also, I guess if we're going into that realm, it works for the Raiders as well. Even if they do trade Derek Carr, they have Marcus Mariota signed to, you know, a pretty team-friendly deal. But
and Mariota and Tua, like, they're tight. Like, that would actually be, I think, a pretty decent situation.
Yeah. I think that would work out. In my most recent mock draft, I'm going to do one more, you know, the morning of Wednesday with, you know, all of the information, all of the, you know, movements in the betting markets and stuff. But I actually had Tua slipping past all the way down to the Raiders' second pick. Now, that's probably not super likely, you know, if he's there for the Raiders' first pick and that's the direction they want to go. However, you know, I think the Raiders want Judy, and I don't think they've made it a secret at all. You know, I think the Raiders, with one of their selections, they just really want to take Jerry Judy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible with Tua, or really with so a couple things. One, with any of these quarterbacks, if a team likes them, so think Jacksonville. You know, it's rumored that maybe they like Jordan Love. If they do, they're not taking him at number 20. They're taking him at number 9. You know what I mean? Like, all of these teams, like, if they have multiple picks in the first round and they like a quarterback, I don't think they're going to wait for him to fall to their second round pick. They're going to take him as soon as they can. And, you know, I think we can look at what the Giants did last year with Daniel Jones, taking him as early as they could. So if a team is on Jordan Love, I think they're going to take him as soon as they can. And with Tua specifically, you know, I had the over early on in prop season at 2.5. I grabbed it at 3.5. You can still find it at 4.5 at one or two books out there. And 5.5 is now the consensus line. I mean, I love the closing line value there. And honestly, like, I would still probably, if I'm leaning on side, take over 5.5 on Tua. Like, I don't think the Dolphins take him at number 5.
So do you think that the Dolphins are going to select Justin Herbert, or do you think that they're just rolling into 2020, 2021 with Rosen, with Fitzpatrick, or you know, whoever?
I think there are enough reports coming out of Miami that they actually do like Justin Herbert. And so, like, I, digging into the numbers more, I don't think he's all that great of a quarterback, but, you know, I could be proven wrong. He strikes me as a Jared Goff-esque type of player. Which, you know, whatever, if he's in the right system, he can have some success. But, there are enough rumors out there that they actually do like Justin Herbert. And so if he's there at 5, I think he's the guy that they take.
So we gotta get to, you know, my favorite player of the draft. And I think someone who I think Jalen Hurts could really throw a wrench in the first round, because not only do I think that the Patriots could take him at 23, but if you told me team X, Y, or Z trades up to take him at 14, you know, where the Buccaneers are, and maybe the Buccaneers miss out on their offensive tackle of choice and they're like, whatever, we'll trade back. Or the Browns miss out on Isaiah Simmons and they're like, whatever, we'll trade back. If you told me team X trades up to 13 to 9 for Jalen Hurts, like, I am not batting an eyelid. I have Jalen Hurts booked at plus 800 to be a first round selection. That number is now like plus 350, plus 400. He's actually, Matt, favored now on both the DraftKings and FanDuel Sportsbook to be a second round draft selection.
Wow. I mean, great stuff there on the closing line value. I had the way I approached it was, you know, looking at different sports books, I was able to lock him in basically at plus money for the second round, plus money for the third round, and then big plus money, 1400 for round one. And so if he goes in rounds two or three, I pretty much break even. And then if he goes in round one, then, you know, I have around like a 5 unit profit there. But, I don't think he goes in round one. I'll just say, I don't think that happens. I'm still taking under 4.5 quarterbacks for round one, because I do think Jordan Love is going to be a first rounder. I don't think he deserves to be, but, you know, Jalen Hurts, love him. I think of all the quarterbacks in the class, he actually does have the most fantasy upside. You know, that's including Burrow, including Tua. Like, I love Jalen Hurts. I think he goes in the second round one way or another. He ends up being a starter. He doesn't turn the ball over, you know, and like NFL coaches really value that. And obviously we know what he can do as a runner, and he's an underappreciated passer. You know, like we have to remember that what he did in Oklahoma, you can say, okay, he had this inflated offense around him and he was playing against Big 12 defenses. But like, we didn't really discount what Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray were able to do in Oklahoma. And they were in a similar set of circumstances. And also, I mean, Jalen Hurts, what he did in his first year there, new team, new system, like new everything. And he was able to do that in year one. Like, what did Joe Burrow do in year one at LSU? Like, not much. Like, he was actually pretty bad in his first year. So I don't know. I'm really on Jalen Hurts, and there are multiple ways that you can bet it. I think if you can still find plus money out there for round two and round three, you take that and then kind of use that to free roll your round one exposure. Cause I don't think he falls past round three. Like, that would just be a crime if he falls past round three.
Well, you know, I think another thing is that Jalen Hurts in like 2007 would have been like a fifth round pick, right? Like,
yes.
they would have been like, oh, running quarterback who has, you know, some accuracy issues or whatever, like that guy's not going to be a top round draft pick. And then you watch Josh Allen, you watch Lamar Jackson, you watch, you know, I mean, even you go back and you look at Tyrod, you look at Kaepernick, like these guys who are mobile enough. And I think it's like maybe an NFL rules thing, but we just have seen with offensive line play just get, you know, kind of progressively more difficult, and more quarterbacks are having trouble, you know, like staying upright. And Hurts is just not going to present that problem. He's not going to take sacks. You know, he's going to create extra plays. And like, coaches are now looking at that stuff like a big positive, because that makes their life easier instead of harder. Like, yeah, okay, you gotta call some new plays. You gotta learn some new things. But having a quarterback who can get you out of trouble on 3rd and 13 when you just called two straight bad plays, like that, I don't even know if you can really put a price on that as a head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. His ability to create positive plays out of negative plays is, I think, almost unrivaled in this class. And I mean, again, he does it with his legs, but I think he's a better thrower than anticipated. Like, if you look at what he did in his age 19 sophomore season, it is highly comparable to what Russell Wilson did in his age 20 redshirt freshman season. Now, like, kind of little discrepancies in terms of experience in college, but it, the age difference balances it out. Like, Hurts has underappreciated potential as a passer.
Well, and I think another thing that we have to talk about is he is still 21 years old. Like, we're talking about this right now. He is 21 years old. Joe Burrow, when he was 21 years old, was still a student at Ohio State. Right. Like, there is much more to come from Jalen Hurts. So I am, you know, just all over his props. I am all over the Tua to fall props, because at this point, I now think that there is so much smoke that there has to be fire from somewhere. And I don't know if that's, you know, a trade, or, you know, some team is just trying to get to Tua. I think another thing that we should talk about is that the markets, you know, on DraftKings, FanDuel, MGM, all the legal sports books in the United States, what's driving these markets is not tons of sharp money. It's not news from NFL teams. It's mock drafts. Like, if you look at the, you know, the R squared between like grinding the mocks and their consensus stuff, and you look at what the books are posting, what you're really going to see is that these are consensus mock draft odds, more or less.
Yeah, very much. And so I think especially early on in the process, there was an edge to be gained. One, if you were just kind of an independent thinker, or two, if you were just focusing on the sharper mock drafters and what they were doing. And that is kind of more my strategy of not necessarily looking at the consensus of like what you see across the industry, but like really what you see in some of the sharper guys who do this on a yearly basis and, you know, do pretty well in mock draft competitions. And some of those guys are pretty plugged in with either connections in the league, or they're just very good at monitoring the beat writers and, you know, the ex-GMs and people like that who have connections. So yeah, there's an advantage to be had for sure.
So I think there is one other big flashpoint of the draft. You know, I think picks 4 through 6 are really important. Can you explain to me why the Giants would not take Isaiah Simmons? Because it seems like just they're not going to. It just seems like the Giants are like, nope, we need an offensive tackle. That is what we are going to do. So, like, how is Isaiah Simmons – like, Isaiah Simmons could legitimately fall outside of the top 10 if things go a certain direction and all these teams decide they want offensive tackles. And, you know, I'm not out here scouting every defensive player, but, like, Isaiah Simmons seems so obviously great that, like, even I understand how good he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's Calvin Johnson playing linebacker, you know, like linebacker slash safety. But, you know, look at Derwin James a couple of years ago. You know, everyone thought he was a top 10 pick and he fell to number 17. You know, like it not to say that James and Simmons are identical players, but they're comparable just in terms of the skill sets that they have and, you know, their hybrid nature and the defense. So I think it's possible that he falls down. Part of it is that teams just kind of don't value as much anymore, like the off-ball linebacker position. And I think that, like, in a vacuum, that makes sense. Like, if a guy is just a pure off-ball linebacker, he doesn't have as much value. But because Simmons is, like, such a multiple player, I think he's obviously worth more. The idea of going with an offensive tackle, one, like, David Gettleman, just, like, he loves those big-bodied guys who can, you know, like, go at it in the trenches. And I think they want to do everything that they can to safeguard the investment they made last year in Daniel Jones. So if they get an offensive lineman, the theory is that, you know, that will help Daniel Jones, but then also, like, that can help the running game. And so that can make Saquon Barkley, you know, whom they invested the number 2 pick in a couple of years ago, that can also make him look better. So I think they think that if they get an offensive tackle and that guy's good, he helps them in multiple ways. But I don't know. I mean, I could go either direction. I think in general, an offensive tackle probably is worth more than an off-ball linebacker, but Simmons is just a different kind of player.
Yeah, Simmons is, to me, like, again, I would always say, you know, take the guy who impacts the passing game. You know, Simmons is going to impact the passing game, but in different ways. You know, he's going to be out there covering running backs in the flat. I mean, he can play in the slot. I think my main argument for why the Giants should draft Isaiah Simmons over an offensive tackle is that you can throw Simmons in coverage on a slot wide receiver, on a tight end, and he's, you know, pretty much going to more than hold his own. Now, if Wirfs or if Jedrick Wills or Mekhi Becton or whoever, if that guy turns into an offensive tackle who can protect Daniel Jones's blind side for, you know, if that guy is doing that job for a decade, then yeah, that's probably going to be a more impactful player, even though I am sure Dave Gettleman is thinking not only about protecting Daniel Jones, but he's also thinking about, okay, well, I got to get running lanes for Saquon out there. So that is, you know, not particularly great. So another thing, Matt, that we did not discuss in segment one is that I am mostly trying to make bets at plus money. Now, you know, every better would love to make every bet at plus 110 or better or whatever, but the reason why I'm hyper focusing on that this year is because of what NFL scouts and GMs have started to say, which is that no one knows anything. Like, a lot of these teams don't know other teams' big boards. They haven't been talking to other team scouts. You know, they haven't been, you know, going out to steak dinners and stuff together. We know from what we got on Monday with the test mock draft that these guys, like, don't know how to do conference calls. So I think that we are going to see, you know, some picks in the first, second round that are just shocking. You know, guys that are, you know, not even top 100 prospects going at the beginning of the second round. Like, we are just going to see a lot of weird stuff in this draft. So I'm really trying to, you know, not bet Chase Young second pick at minus 3,500. Like, I'm trying to really avoid those wagers on my card this year.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that's probably sharp. In retrospect, I probably have taken too many, you know, big bets of like minus 400 or more. But in all fairness, like, I actually have gotten closing line value on a lot of those, so I still feel pretty decent about it. But yeah, especially with this year, there's just so much that is unknown. So if I could go back, you know, like a month, 2 months ago and kind of undo some things, I probably wouldn't be laying as much juice as I have, but I still feel decent about most of the bets that I've made, even when they were at minus, you know, like 200 or more odds.
So the one really short bet that I still, I mean, not really short, but it's close to even money on most books, is Jeffrey Okuda to be the third overall pick. I just think at this point with the Tua hip stuff and, you know, the lack, the teams not feeling that confident in their selections and like having a lot of options, I don't see a team trading up. The Lions need a cornerback way more than they need Isaiah Simmons. They're not going to get Chase Young. I mean, maybe there's some chance that they trade back, or maybe they, I heard a good conspiracy theory, trade Stafford to the Patriots, take to take Herbert. I heard that. It seems like everyone who is rumored at this point to take a quarterback is they're going to trade their other quarterback to the New England Patriots. So, but I think Okuda just goes number three to the Lions. That's just happening.
Yeah, the one that scares me just a little bit about that is that Derek Brown conceivably could go to the Lions at number three. But I think either way, they're taking a defensive player. And so the places where I have really kind of like fired my arsenal of missiles, I've unloaded on the idea of Chase Young going to the Redskins at number two. And I did that really early on. So I'm pleased with the line value that I've gotten there on all of those picks. And then Okuda for me is kind of that point where I already have fired at that quite a bit, and I'm feeling right. A little less certain about it now. But yeah, Okuda number three, Okuda to the Lions, the trifecta of Burrow, Young, Okuda as the top three, the Lions going with the defensive player. I felt really confident about that. I liked Okuda under 4.5. Okuda is the second defensive player off of the board. I really liked that one. Okuda in the top five. Yeah, I mean, I've gone off on the idea of Okuda going to the Lions and approaching that from as many different ways as possible. I'm feeling less certain about it now just because some sharp mock drafters have floated out the idea of Derek Brown going at number three. And that that terrifies me because that will hurt on the Okuda front. But I still think it's likelier than not that Okuda does go to the Lions.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's a wager. I don't know if I would still book it at even money. I think it's still probably a reasonable selection at even money. I just don't like it as much now, obviously.
At even money.
Odds were better.
Yeah, at even money, I still think that's a pretty decent bet, but I wouldn't go underneath that.
So, again, another one of the strong positions I've taken is that I'm pretty sure that CeeDee Lamb is going to go ahead of Jerry Jeudy. I think that the Jets would take Lamb. And I also think that, you know, we've heard so much chat about Ruggs. We've heard so much talk about, you know, teams wanting to trade up for him. The Broncos want to trade up for Ruggs. Maybe the Buccaneers want to take Ruggs. Like, and that to me, more than maybe any of this of the draft season smokescreen stuff, Ruggs is going to be the third wide receiver taken. Lamb is going to be first. Jeudy is going to be second. Ruggs is going to go third. And that I just think I would be very surprised if that was not the order that things went. How do you have that wagered?
Yeah, so I haven't bet on Jeudy to be number one. Really early on in the process, I bet on Lamb at, I believe, plus 150 to be the number one. And there's, I mean, that wasn't great value. But at the time, it looked like it was a coin flip between Lamb and Jeudy with Ruggs as a distant third. And at that point, I did bet on Ruggs at 12-1 to be the number one receiver off the board. So good closing line value there on Ruggs. But I honestly think if I had to lean a direction, I would lean Lamb. But I don't think there's any value in betting it there because I think it is pretty much like a very tight three-man race between those guys. Like if you look, like I kind of have like a mock draft index of looking at like the guys that I think are the sharpest mock drafters. And if you look at the median range of outcomes for these guys on, you know, just 50% of the time, Lamb is going off of the board at number 12, Judy's going off the board at 12.5, and Ruggs is going off the board at number 13. Like, it really could not be any closer between those three guys. So at this point, I'm not taking a position on it because the odds really do reflect that it really could be any one of those guys. If I had to lean a direction, not thinking of any odds at all, I would say Lamb, but I'm not betting on it at this point.
One, I've made a couple of like the specific player to team wagers, and mm-hmm. the odds are not very good on this one anymore. But at one point, you could get the Broncos to select Ruggs at, you know, the legal U.S. books. Like you could get it at like 7-1, 8-1, 9-1, and I just think like the Broncos are gonna get Ruggs. I just think that Lamb and Jeudy are gonna be off the board at that point. I mean, it would be hilarious if the Buccaneers selected Ruggs at 14 and, you know, John Elway sitting there and he's like, man, I really wanted to get Ruggs to create some space for Courtland Sutton and to give Drew Lock someone to throw howitzers to. But yeah, the Denver Broncos have not been shy about the fact that they really want Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, I have Ruggs to the Broncos at 7-1 and also Ruggs to the Jets at 7.5-1. And I'm fine with those. I'm in a bigger position on the Broncos bet versus the Jets one. But I do like that quite a bit.
What have you made any other specific player to team wagers? Because there are some pretty good ones out there still, and the markets have not adjusted. Like one that seems to maybe not make a ton of sense is Derek Brown to the Arizona Cardinals. But he's pretty consistently mocked there. And I believe there's like some Cliff Kingsbury, Derek Brown connection. So like that's one that I have placed. You can also get the Arizona Cardinals to just take a defensive player at like 3-1. The Arizona Cardinals to take a defensive lineman at like 8-1. So there are a lot of, you know, wagers to be made on basically the Cardinals not taking an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I haven't bet that one yet, to be honest. I'm going to start updating my mock draft today and tomorrow, and I'm going to look at it a little bit more. I've seen that out there. A few sharp mockers have started to put Derek Brown at number 8 to the Cardinals. I don't know. I mean, I could see it, but I need to look at it a little bit more. I haven't bet on it yet.
Yeah, I think that's one that I was interested in. What about how many wide receivers just total in the first round? Because I think that is, again, another sort of skeleton key to wagering on the 2020 NFL draft. Like if you're like, oh, well, Denzel Mims, Justin Jefferson, Jalen Reagor, like if you think all those guys are going to go, in the first round, kind of in the tail end, like that's going to change a ton how you bet these as well.
Yeah. So, you know, 5.5 is the number that has been out there for a long time. I had it really early on at, you know, -110. And at this point it's moved to, you know, I believe at some books it's like -200 and the line has moved to 6.5 at some books. So it really just depends. I really do like over 5.5. 6.5 feels like it's a little too much. I mean, I can see how we get there. You know, I think there are the four guys who are locked in, like those top three that we mentioned. Justin Jefferson is locked in. And then after that, it's a little more tenuous in terms of whether it's Denzel Mims or Jalen Reagor, T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk. You know, I think we see two of those guys get in, but three might be just a little bit tougher. Like this is a deep wide receiver class, but I still wouldn't say that it is historically strong at the top. So I don't know if we see seven wide receivers get in.
To me, a pretty good argument against seven wide receivers getting in is that some of the teams that are going to be selecting these are teams that have Super Bowl aspirations. So, you know, the New Orleans Saints, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, there's not going to be rookie minicamps. There might not even be OTAs at all. These teams might not even get full training camps in if there is a season to be played. And I think it's certainly at this point, you know, fanless games is probably more likely than any other scenario, even if, you know, it's not better than even money or whatever. And those teams are like, well, rookie wide receivers are coin flips to be good anyways. Like you can take JJ Arcega-Whiteside, he shows up and you're like, actually this guy can't play at all. So like, you know, we're going to be playing Greg Ward, a college quarterback, over JJ Arcega-Whiteside. We're going to be picking up, Deontay Burnett and playing him off the street over JJ Arcega-Whiteside. So like, I think that it would not surprise me if there are less wide receivers going in the first round than we expect. And we hear afterward, you know, Schefter and Rap Sheet are getting quotes from GMs where they're being like, look, we do not have the luxury of teaching this guy our system, getting this guy comfortable with our quarterback. We wanted linemen who can show up and block. We wanted edge rushers who could show up and rush the quarterback. We wanted safeties who just are going to go out and be safeties. We wanted cornerbacks we could throw on an island. Like, it would not surprise me if that's what we hear from GMs.
Yeah, that feels accurate. I still think we see a good number of guys go on day two. You know, I think it's a really strong wide receiver class for that range. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if for the teams that really want to make the Super Bowl, getting a wide receiver right now on day one, I don't think that's going to make the difference.
Yeah. So let's like specifically some of those teams back there. Like, what do you think the New Orleans Saints do? They are pretty much always mocked a linebacker. Same for the Baltimore Ravens. The Chiefs are, I mean, it's so funny. Like every, if you go to Grinding the Mocks or like these consensus mock draft sites, like everyone gives them DeAndre Swift or Jonathan Taylor. They're not doing that. They are not taking DeAndre Swift. They're not taking Jonathan Taylor. They are more likely to spend a future draft pick to get up and take Ruggs, get up and take Lamb or Judy, get up to take Justin Jefferson than they would. They are legitimately more likely to take Cole Kmet at 32 than they are to take a running back. It's just not happening, right? They're just not taking a running back. So, like, what do you think the Chiefs do at 32?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think they do something on the defensive side of the ball. And most likely, I think that would be a cornerback, just because they do have some pretty significant needs there. They lost Kendall Fuller, I believe, went back to the Washington Redskins. Juan Thornhill, their free safety, had his ACL injury late in the season. So, like, they're just a little bit thinner in the secondary than they probably want to be. So, and not to mention, like, Bashaud Breeland is on a 1-year contract. So, like, I think they need to do something on defense. Secondary makes sense, but I could also see them wanting to, like, who knows what's going to happen with Chris Jones. There are rumors he could be traded. I could see them wanting to upgrade on the defensive line. So Ross Blacklock in particular out of TCU, defensive tackle, is a guy who's been mocked to them a couple of times. So I think defense here, cornerback, and then probably defensive line.
I think I would probably say like cornerback, safety, regardless, because they can play, they can play honey badger wherever. He can play nickel corner. He can play strong safety, free safety. I also think that interior offensive lineman is something they would look at as well. Just I just don't know if they would do it with pick 32. But there's a offensive guard from Wisconsin who, like, if you're gonna take an interior offensive lineman, take them from Wisconsin.
Well, and we should talk about this in terms of how it relates to our Dallas Cowboys. Cesar Ruiz as the center slash guard from Michigan. I think he's the one interior lineman that I've seen consistently mocked in the first round. And so he could be an option there for the Chiefs at number 32. But man, the Cowboys, I could see them, especially with Travis Frederick retiring, I could see them thinking, like, offensive line is really important to us. This guy's a first rounder. Let's go get our center who can protect Dak, you know, something like that. And I will be so tilted if they take a center at number 17. And that's not to say, like, I'm not a guru of offensive line play, especially when it comes to interior offensive linemen. But it's going to kill me for a couple of reasons, especially because I've been pretty invested in the idea of the Cowboys taking a defensive player with their first pick. So we'll just kind of have to see what happens there. But Cesar Ruiz, he's a guy I could see the Cowboys actually drafting at number 17.
Well, here's the thing. I actually would accept them taking Cesar Ruiz because it means that they're not taking Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen. Them taking Kenneth Murray, even though he went to Oklahoma, even though I love him, I just, like, man, I cannot have them taking an off-ball linebacker at 17.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if it's an edge rusher, if it's a cornerback, that's what I want. And there should be some of those players available at number 17 who are pretty decent. I'm hoping they go that way. But yeah, I agree. Definitely don't want an off-ball linebacker, especially because they've already invested in that position within the past couple of years.
I mean, they still have Sean Lee on the team. You know, they spent the high pick on Leighton Vander Esch. Like, this team just has a surplus of linebackers. And I mean, granted, it is nice to, like, not have to worry about that position, because it used to be, because Sean Lee would always be hurt, and then, you know, Dallas would just be throwing out, like, all these street free agents, and that was always super painful to watch, because it does, defending the run doesn't matter, but when you're watching a game and you're watching your team just get assaulted by 6-yard runs at a time, it does oftentimes feel like run defense does matter a little bit. So I what I want the Cowboys to do is I want them to trade with Seattle back from that pick and let Seattle trade up for Yetur Gross-Matos, because that's who supposedly Seattle wants. I don't think that Dallas needs to take him there. I think that, you know, they'd rather trade back. So that's what I want them to do. Not super hopeful that they will. Wanted to talk a little bit more about Henry Ruggs, though. Very similar to Isaiah Simmons, very similar to Tua. I think that he is, you know, if some team makes some egregious, you know, multi-first round trade up for him, like he can really swing this draft as well.
Yeah. So let's imagine a scenario in which we know the Broncos at number 15 have expressed some interest in Ruggs, but you know, what if things fall a certain way and then they have the opportunity to get Lamb or to get Judy and Ruggs falls to the Cowboys at number 17? How would you feel about them drafting him at number 17? I guess this taps into the larger question of what do you think of Ruggs in general? Because I have to say, like, even though I know a lot of the analytics community isn't on him, I think he's probably better than a numbers-based analyst would think.
Well, I just think that the Chiefs have basically already proven the hypothesis that if you just put a bunch of really, really fast guys on a football team and you give them an athletic quarterback who's like not afraid to throw the ball down the field, who's not afraid to trust his wide receivers, that's going to result in a lot of points scored. So you put Amari Cooper out there, you put Michael Gallup out there, you put Henry Ruggs out there, you put Ezekiel Elliott / Tony Pollard out there, you take Jason Witten off the field and you replace that with a guy who can move in Blake Jarwin or Dalton Schultz, or, you know, I actually think the Cowboys are pretty likely to take a tight end in this draft, you know, whether it be Troutman, whether it be Albert O, whoever. I think they're likely to select a tight end in the mid rounds. I love it. I mean, I said pretty much the whole time, the guy I actually want the Cowboys to take is CeeDee Lamb, because for a while it looked like he might be there. He's not going to be there at 17 for them. Now, I can see a scenario where Ruggs gets there, and if they took Ruggs, I would be happy about that. I would say that, like, first of all, I think the main thing taking Ruggs would show is that this is a team that is committed to scoring points, and like, yeah, rooting for a team committed to scoring points would feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think it would be the baller move of like, you know what, our defense is just going to be whatever it is, but we're going to look to maximize our offense as much as we can. And I mean, having Ruggs there with Amari Cooper, obviously, and then Michael Gallup, as you mentioned, adding Blake Jarwin to it, like that would be pretty exciting. So I understand why there would be reasons to be tentative about Ruggs. And I think he's a very spot dependent player. Like if he lands with the wrong team, then like all bets are just totally off with him. But if he lands with a team that actually has some sense of how they could use him, and he has the benefit of not being the guy that the defense focuses on, man, he could be really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys last year really already tried to do that. So they signed Randall Cobb, they signed Tavon Austin, they signed Devin Smith, and they're like, they tried all these guys out. They tried all of them out as like the create space, you know, get out there and let Gallup and Cooper, you know, fight against single coverage. That's really what they tried to do. I mean, I think that, you know, if Ruggs comes to Dallas, the big thing we're going to have is like, okay, well, is McCarthy just going to make this dude Dexter McCluster, or is he going to let Kellen Moore, you know, call the offense? And this is just the big question hanging over the Dallas Cowboys organization, is like, what is the split of responsibility and power going to be between Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore?
Yeah, we have to wait to see. I'm hopeful that it's Kellen Moore who has kind of a little more of the day-to-day control in the play calling control of what happens with the offense. But yeah, as you say, we really don't know.
So I think the biggest thing, other even than wide receivers, is like, this is going to have the biggest impact on the NFL, is how many of the offensive tackles in this draft actually match their projection, right? So if these guys actually earn value as first round offensive linemen, we're talking about so many teams getting better on the offensive line. You know, we're talking about the Giants having a competent offensive line. We're talking about the Cardinals having a competent offensive line, the Panthers, maybe the Browns. And like, if all of these teams all of a sudden have, you know, B plus left tackles, like that's 25% of the NFL who just got better offensive lines.
Yeah. So a few things on this. One, this is a good class, especially at the top for offensive line linemen. Two, I think it might be easier this year to incorporate. Let me rephrase that. I think it might be easier for teams to incorporate offensive linemen than wide receivers or tight ends or anyone else they might want to bring in on the offensive side of the ball in this season in particular, because we just don't know what's happening with OTAs, training camp, etc. And then three, there's just the need in the NFL for good offensive linemen, as you touched on. And so, yeah, I mean, Tristan Wirfs, Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton, Andrew Thomas, I think those guys are all pretty strong bets to go in the top 12. I think Joshua Jones from Houston and then Austin Jackson from USC. I like him quite a bit. I think they honestly will both go in the first round. And then you have guys who are a little more borderline. Cesar Ruiz, who we talked about earlier, and then Isaiah Wilson from Georgia and Ezra Cleveland from Boise State. Both of those guys are kind of fringe first rounders. And so I think, you know, one way or another, we probably get seven offensive linemen in this class going in round one, maybe even eight.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that. You know, offensive linemen, like, and well, more specifically, investment in the offensive line generally has a future positive correlation with like adjusted line yards and, you know, Pro Football Focus, run and pass block grading, and that just, you know, if it was up to me, every team would have a great offensive line, right? Because that's awesome for fantasy football. The more teams that have good offensive lines, the more teams that can block, the more fantasy points are going to be scored, and that's, you know, that's what we are all here for. So. As long as, you know, this is my show, so we're going to talk more about the Dallas Cowboys. What I actually want them to do is a bet that I love, which is Dallas is plus 700 for a safety. You can probably find it even deeper for Grant Delpit specifically, or Delpit over McKinney. Like, I think Delpit is awesome, and his over-under is like out of the first round now, 32.5. If they just stick there and pick at 17 and they take Delpit, I'm going to be stoked. Like, I think that is a good selection. I think he, very similar to what Honey Badger did for the Chiefs, I think Delpit can do that for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, Delpit was a consensus All-American, and I believe in 2019 he was the number one, I think won the Jim Thorpe Award, right, as the top defensive back in the nation. So, and I think he's like a football player, you know, like there are a lot of like things to like about him in terms of what he does on the field. In terms of an athlete, I don't know how good he is, but I don't know. I doubt he goes in the first round. Like, I really haven't seen him mocked there all that often.
That's going to be one of my biggest leaks if he doesn't, because I have Delpit over McKinney, Delpit in the first round, like, and some of these teams to take a safety. So that one's going to hurt me if he doesn't.
Yeah, and I imagine at this point that it's pretty decent value that you're going to – actually, I'm looking at it now on DraftKings. It's only plus 400 for Delpit to be the first safety drafted. I would have hoped to get a better number there, closer to like 800. But, yeah, so I wouldn't be taking any bets on Delpit.
All right, what are some trades that we think are reasonable? And I need to say the caveat that I think that this draft being mobile is either going to, one, make trades basically impossible, where like these guys are so overwhelmed by the technology, it's just too much to keep the draft going, that they're just like, you know what, we're picking our like we're picking our players, like sort of like when someone joins a league on My Fantasy League for the first time and they're so overwhelmed by all the options and like the interface hurts their eyes and they're just like, you know what, I'm picking my players and I'm getting out of here. Yeah. Or the fact that it's going to drag on because all the teams are going to get 20, 30 minutes to make their selections because they don't want, you know, the NFL does not want technical difficulties to hurt their draft. I think it's going to result in more trades. So, first of all, which direction do you think that will go, Matt?
I think there are going to be fewer trades, but that's just me. And part of it is that just kind of looking at how the board sits, and maybe like this is just the case every year and I kind of forget it, but like I don't look at the board in the first round and think these teams need to trade in order to get up to a player who like fits their need or something like that. For the most part, it looks like a lot of the teams can get a player at their pick that makes sense for what they need, and that kind of like fits the value of the draft. So I think we'll have fewer trades, but I mean, the Jags, like it's interesting to think about what they're going to do at number 9, you know, having the number 20 pick. Do they trade up if like Tua starts to slip a little bit? Do they trade down because like they're not really interested in anyone in the top 10? The same with the Raiders, you know, they have two picks. What are they going to do? Tampa Bay, I could see them trading up a little bit just so that they can ensure that they get an offensive tackle. Like I think the Jets and Bucks trading, you know, just a few
makes
picks.
Sense.
I think,
yeah,
I think that would make sense. I could see the Patriots trading down. I could see the Seahawks trading down. That's just kind of something that they tend to do. I could also see the Eagles trading down a little bit because like everyone is pegging them to take a wide receiver and that could happen, but they tend to trade down anyway. And then, you know, also it's a deep class for wide receivers. So, I mean, they could trade down five picks and still get a wide receiver they really like. So, that's kind of what I'm looking at for trades. But in terms of mock drafts, I think you actually become more inaccurate if you try to predict trades because it's just like, you know that chaos is going to happen. You know a certain number of trades is going to happen. But like trying to predict the chaos is something that's almost impossible.
The two trades that I think are most likely would be Denver trading up to someone to take Ruggs. So, you know, whether that be to 10, whether that be to 9, you know, I think them trading up for Ruggs is, I would say that's the number one most likely. And the number two would be the Patriots trading out of the first round entirely. Because if you kind of look at 23, that's where we're going to be looking at like Kenneth Murray, Patrick Queen, Justin Jefferson's probably gone by then. You know, Ruggs is going to be gone by then. All the stud offensive tackles are going to be gone. So I think that unless they want to take Jordan Love or Jalen Hurts, I think they just trade out of the first round entirely.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And you mentioned Jordan Love there. He really is the guy that I think will drive a lot of what happens. And I'm not sure yet how I want to mock it. You know, like, does he go number 9 to Jacksonville, number 12 to the Raiders? Like, I'm really uncertain about what to do with him because I think he either goes much higher than we think or he, like, goes much lower than we think.
Like Drew Locke. Like, yeah. Drew Locke was kind of thought he'd be a first-round pick, and, he went 39 to Denver.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there's a chance that Love falls out of the first round entirely and like people are just high on him the way that they were high on Locke. And honestly, like, I don't think Love deserves to be a first rounder. So this might be an instance where like my insight is actually something that goes along with what the rest of the league thinks. But normally that's not the case.
I think another really interesting aspect of this draft is that, you know, because these books are so hard up for action and people are going to be willing to get down on a ton of things, I think we're going to see way more props come up for day two and day three than we normally do. Like, I think you're going to be able to log in to these books on Thursday night, Friday morning, and there's going to be a menu of 110 bets for day two of the NFL draft.
I think you're right, and it terrifies me because like round one is hard enough on its own to try to predict. Round two and like round anything after round one, it's just like it's a firestorm, and I don't think I would be able to bet it with any degree of accuracy. So at that point, maybe it's just like taking a lot of, you know, plus money props. But I hate to say this as someone who loves the draft and loves betting on it. After day one, I will probably be staying away just because, like, I know I have no edge.
Yeah. All right. So time for our favorite bets. Mine is very easy, and it is every tight end other than Adam Trautman and Cole Kmet to be the first tight end drafted. So Bryson Hopkins, Hunter Bryant, Albert O, you know, just all, I think every, because We're already saying, like, we think this draft is just going to be, we just think it's going to be crazy. We think that there's no consensus amongst these teams. For these bets to be profitable, I literally think you just have to fade some team falling in love with Kmet.
Yeah. And as we said, like, after round one, really anything can happen, especially for a position where there's no one who really stands out.
There's no one good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Kmet will probably be like a better professional than people think just because like he's 21 years old and that counts for a lot at the tight end position. And he's going to have like a day two draft grade on him. But yeah, Albert Okwuegbunam is the guy that I've invested the most in at tight end position to go number one. And like, I bet on him at 14 to one. And then I found that number at 16 to one at another book. And I like that quite a bit there. And honestly, there's There's some hype on him. Gilbrandt had him, I believe, as the number 39 player. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but the number 39 player in his hot 150, which like tends to be, just because of how plugged in Gilbrandt is, like tends to be fairly reflective of how the league values players. And so I wasn't expecting Albert O to have a ranking that high, but that feels great. But yesterday, I saw something from Chris Sims saying that he would be shocked if Cole Kmet is not a first rounder. Now, like, I don't really know what that means. I don't tend to think of Sims as like someone who is super plugged in to the league, especially when it comes to draft prospects, but he has gotten a few things right in the past. And so like, I don't think of Kmet as a first rounder, but I don't know, like we might see his odds start to move a little bit.
Well, I mean, all we got to do to be right is we just got to fade. We just got to fade Chris Sims. We just have to fade Chris Sims once. All right, real quick, 30 seconds. Your favorite NFL draft prop bet and why, Matt?
Under 0.5 running backs drafted in the first round. Yep, absolutely love it. I think this should be a coin flip, and you can still find that number out there at plus 150, plus 200 at a couple books. Great value there.
All right, so we just got to fade Jonathan Taylor and DeAndre Swift to the Chiefs. It's not a year where running backs are going to go in the first round. Blessed, the nerds have won, the analytics have won. So everyone, thank you very much for listening to Matt and I. If you guys want more content, Matt is going to have, just all of his stuff is up on the Action Network. Not very hard to find. It's all of it's there. And then on sportsgrid.com, we have a massive post hyperlinking all of our NFL draft prop betting articles, all of my mock drafts. I'll have one more mock draft that comes out Wednesday morning. Maybe I'll refresh that a little bit on Thursday morning. We'll be live during the NFL draft. I'm sure Matt will be as well. Everyone, so thank you very much for listening and watching the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. We will be back tomorrow, and then, of course, throughout the rest of the week, recapping all of the action of the 2020 NFL draft. Boom. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, man.
All right, man. Have fun with Manchin. Yeah. Just got to hit Jalen Hurts in the first round.
Yeah. That won't be good for my under 4.5 quarterbacks. But I don't know. Maybe the dream is Hurts goes in the first round and Jordan Love falls out of the first round and I nail both. That would be the dream.
I don't think Jordan Love is going to go in the first round. I think that's unlikely. Because that's a guy, that's a Trubisky, right? That's a guy who gets a GM fired.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll see. All right. Thanks, man.
All right, man. Later. Bye.